Chapter 11 probably takes place somewhere between The Boy in Red and The Line in the Sand, at various points between fix when nothing is going on. "Hey, your order's up!" Audrey shouted as she stacked several pizza boxes on the counter. She looked up as Carter came over and grabbed them. "Have you been out to the Hale place before?"
"No," Carter said, and grabbed the boxes. "Why? What's up?"
"You can't actually get into the property," Audrey said. "It's gated."
"What, like a gated neighborhood?" Carter asked.
"No, like the property is out on the preserve and there's a fence. Just when you get there, call the number on the order and they'll come out to the fence and pick the stuff up."
Carter frowned. "Why don't they just leave the gate open if they've ordered something for delivery?"
"Carter, do I know? Is it my business?" "No!" Audrey dumped the stack of boxes in his arms. "Chop, chop!"
Carter shook his head, frowning a little and nearly staggering underneath the weight of the boxes. "They must be having one hell of a party," he said, and headed for the car. 6 large pizzas could feed about 15 people. He saw Audrey shaking her head off to the side, but didn't bother. The drive out to the preserve was further than he usually had to go for a job, but in a way, it was nice. Less time sitting around getting bitched at by the manager was always nice. When he reached the fence, he parked off to the side and gave it a dubious look. "Weird," he muttered, but dialed the number on his cell phone as instructed. The fence was plastered with "no trespassing" signs, and he wasn't about to risk his job. "Stilinski Surrogacy Services, you need 'em, we breed 'em," a bright voice picked up.
Hello? Carter said. "This is Pizza Express. You're..."
"Oh, are you at the fence? Cool, we'll be right there," the voice said, and then the line disconnected. Carter was left blinking at the phone. He shook his head a little and then got back in his car to wait. It was dark out, and he had to admit that the preserve was a little spooky. He was a city kid. He wondered if he could con Dominique into taking the run the next time the Hales ordered. From the way Audrey had talked about it, it happened fairly often. That was what he was thinking when a camo-colored Jeep rumbled up and pulled to a stop just inside the fence. A gangly teenager a year or two younger than Carter was behind the wheel. But Carter didn't take much note of him because Derek Hale, the scariest person in Beacon Hills, was scowling his way towards the fence. Carter went very still, feeling like there was a target on his back, or possibly on his face.
Pizza, he said stupidly, as Derek started undoing the locks. Derek gave him a look that clearly said, "You don't say." And then Carter got distracted again, because 2 more people were emerging from the Jeep. 2 beautiful people. 2 of the most beautiful young women he had ever seen. One with dark blonde hair, wearing tight jeans and a leather jacket and a wicked smile. The other was a redhead, somehow managing to be statuesque even though she was several inches shorter than the blonde and wearing a simple sundress. Carter gaped at both of them as the blonde reached out and took the pizzas from his hands. "It's not that we don't trust you," the teenager who had been driving the Jeep said, as they started to check each box to make sure their order was correct. "It's just that, well, screw-ups happen, right? Fact of life."
"We're good,"
the blonde said, her mouth already full of pizza.
"Really, Erica?"
Derek said, giving her that same unamused look that Carter had been a victim of a few minutes earlier. She gave a remorseless shrug and flounced towards the car. Carter wondered why it took 4 people to come pick up pizza, especially pizza that could be brought directly to one's door if one did not have a creepy house in the middle of nowhere surrounded by a creepy fence. Yeah, he was definitely asking Dominique to do this next time.
"Here," Derek said.
"Huh?" Carter said. Derek stared at him, looked deliberately down at his extended hand with money in it, and then back at Carter.
"Oh," Carter said. "Right. Thanks." He took the money and found it was a crisp $100 bill. I'm not sure I can break.
It's for you. Keep the change.
Derek turned and headed back to the Jeep.
But the pizzas were only 62.
Carter's voice trailed off because Derek was already getting back in the Jeep, and then it was pulling away.
Oh, he said, blinking after them. Then he got in his car and headed back to Pizza Express.
You look like someone just sprouted an extra head in front of you, Audrey said when he returned.
Are they always like that?
Carter asked.
Yep.
Do they order on Thursday nights a lot? Because put me down to work, like every Thursday from now on if they do.
Audrey looked amused and said, I'll see what I can do.
One thing was sure about working in the Beacon Hills Police Department. It was never boring. Xavier Montero had discovered that after working there only a month. But as a low-ranking officer, he had a feeling that he steered clear of the worst of it. Whenever things got really weird, the sheriff always showed up and took control of the situation. So things got awkward when Sheriff Stilinski had the flu and had been put on strict bed rest.
By his doctor? Xavier asked, and Madison had snorted and said, by his son.
And then there was an incident down at the Beacon Hills Mall. Xavier wasn't sure what kind of incident it was, and he certainly had never trained for anything like it. It was a combination of vandalism, harassment, and shoplifting. But the problem was, nobody had spotted a perpetrator, even though it had been going on for over an hour by the time he got there. Things were going missing, windows were painted bright colors, women were reporting having their butts pinched, men had had their shoelaces tied together. Xavier wasn't sure if it was schoolchildren at work or what, but nobody ever saw the damage taking place, and whenever someone was grabbed, there was nobody there when they turned around. Xavier was starting to think it was all a hoax when he took a step forward and nearly careened through a plate glass window because someone had tied his laces together, and he had never noticed anyone near him. Review of the security footage was likewise useless.
I don't get it, he said, rubbing a hand over his head.
Madison, his partner, chewed on her lower lip.
Well, we'd better figure it out, she said. Christmas is in 4 days, and the mall is only going to get busier. The stores can't get reimbursement for their insurance if we can't figure out what's going on.
Yeah, but... Xavier started, and then they heard shouting.
Jesus, what now?
He said. What now turned out to be that someone had poured laundry soap in the small fountain, and mounds of bubbles were heading in every direction. They got the fountain turned off and janitorial staff to clean up the worst of it, but they had barely finished that when there were reports of dancing outfits in Macy's, although when the police approached, all the clothing dropped to the floor, motionless.
What the fuck? Xavier blurted.
I think I'd better call... Madison hesitated.
Who? The fucking Ghostbusters?
Xavier demanded. Madison sighed. I'm calling Stilinski.
He's sick, remember? Xavier said. I'm pretty sure he's not going to want to get dragged out of bed for whatever the fuck this is.
I'm not calling the sheriff, Madison said, scrolling through her phone's menu. I'm calling Stiles, his son. She ignored the way Xavier was gaping at her and then spoke into the phone. Hey, Stiles, it's Officer Peretti. We've got a bit of a situation.
I'm honestly not sure, but something is down at the mall tying shoelaces together and pouring laundry soap into the fountains, but nothing's showing up on the security cams.
Oh?
Yeah, okay. Okay, I'll meet you outside the security offices.
She hung up and ignored the way Xavier was gaping at her.
Why did you just call a 17-year-old?
He's 18 now, Madison said.
Oh, that's okay then, Xavier said, rolling his eyes.
I know that Sheriff Stalinsky's sick, but show me where in the manual it says to call in a civilian. Show me where in the manual it deals with pranksters who are invisible to security cameras,
Madison said.
I'm going to go hit up the Cinnabon. He said he'd be here in 20 minutes. Xavier just gaped after her. He scowled and shook his head and decided not to accompany her. There had to be some physical evidence, some rational explanation for what was going on. He went back to the security closet and started re-reviewing the footage around the fountain. He still didn't see anything. It just suddenly started to bubble. Frustrated, he pulled footage for a few of the other incidents. He was still engrossed in that when he heard Madison talking outside the security offices. He slammed the door open and scowled at the gangly teenager standing there chatting with her. He was holding a bag from a local bakery. What, you had to make a stop first? Xavier asked, sneering at him. Yep, Stiles said, unperturbed.
Bread and honey, that's the best way to catch pixies.
What? Xavier said. Stiles set the bag down, withdrew several loaves of fresh white bread, and started slicing it with a bread knife that he had brought with him. Just pour a few stripes on it, he said, handing the bear-shaped bottle of honey to Madison. We'll put it around the mall in a few places. They'll gorge themselves. They can't help it. That'll slow them down long enough for us to get rid of them.
Pixies, though? Xavier asked, folding his arms over his chest.
Madison, are you taking notes?
Yeah, Madison said. That way we don't have to call him next time.
Xavier scowled and went back into the security offices, because slicing bread was not in the job description for law enforcement. He took out his phone and called the deputy on duty, Carmichael.
Just reporting in. Something weird is going on down at the mall. Madison's called in the sheriff's kid, and he's pulling her chain and talking about pixies, and she's going along with it.
There was a heavy sigh at the other end of the phone. You just keep looking at the security footage. I'll come handle it.
Carmichael hung up. Xavier shook his head and kept working. He realized about 20 minutes later that he didn't hear voices anymore. He went to open the door and see what was going on, but it was locked.
Oh, for fuck's sake!
He put his shoulder against it, but it didn't budge. With a sigh, he got on his radio. This was going to be humiliating, but it was better than breaking the door and causing property damage.
I'm locked in the goddamn security closet, he reported to Madison.
Copy that, she said. I'm down by the Dillards, but on my way.
He paced back and forth, irritated. It was almost 10 minutes, and he was about to call her again before the door opened and an annoyed-looking security guard let him out. Madison was standing behind him.
What took so long?
Was just finishing up with the perp, she said. I guess some kids had hacked into the feed. That's why we didn't see anything on the cameras. Anyway, they're all minors and no real damage was done, so Carmichael's talking to the parents, but we probably won't press charges.
Oh, Xavier said. He was so relieved to have a rational explanation that he didn't even ask where the Stalinsky kid had gone or if they had enjoyed their bread and honey. There were still some crumbs on the table in the break room. He didn't think much of it when, a few weeks later, Sheriff Stalinsky called him into the office and explained that he was being transferred to nearby Stockton. It was fine by him. They needed the manpower, Stalinsky said, and he was a bachelor and could move easily enough. He had no problem showing his back to Beacon Hills. It was a pretty weird place.
Mike Tamlin's hands were dirty when his phone chimed to indicate that he had an incoming text. Specifically, he was up to his elbows in a pork roast. He took a few minutes to finish tying it off and put it in the display case before going to check his phone. He wasn't worried. He knew who it was. Stiles was prompt as always. Mike had met Stiles almost a year previous, when the teenager had wandered into his butcher shop, bouncing like he was on speed. The shop had been in Mike's family for generations.
It was a combination butcher's shop, farmer's market, and bakery. His wife did most of the work in the bakery, and these days he had hired some local kids to help out. Business was good, and he had no complaints. Styles had come in and said brightly, "Hey, so, I was hoping you could help me out. I've got a special anniversary coming up, and I want to make a really good dinner, and a friend of mine said that I should come here for the best quality stuff."
"Well, your friend was right," Mike had said. "Are you doing something fancy or something solid?"
Styles had pursed his lips and said, "Elaborate?"
"Well, I've got some good lamb pork chops, and that always does well with the gourmet crowd," Mike had said, thinking that this kid really seemed too young to have an anniversary to celebrate. Maybe it was for his parents. "But for my money, I'd rather have a good beef tenderloin any day. You get more food for your money, and it sticks with you longer."
"I bow to your superior expertise," Styles had said, and then surprised Mike by buying 8 pounds. Enough meat to feed a dozen people. Mike gave him some cooking instructions, and he had bounced back out of the store happy. A week later, he had been back, talking about how good the roast was, and what did he have on sale this week. From then on, Styles had been a regular at the shop. He started buying other stuff there, and Mike was always surprised at the quantity. He bought his apples in pecks, and it wasn't unusual for him to buy 4 loaves of bread at a time. He and Margaret, Mike's wife, started swapping recipes. According to her, Styles did a lot of his own baking, but rarely baked anything that needed to rise, because he didn't have time. He was often accompanied by a large black dog. Mike really thought it looked more like a wolf, but it wasn't his business. With a blue vest, who enjoyed antagonizing Mittens and Cupcake? The store cats. About 6 months after Styles had first come into Mike's shop, he had showed up on what was a truly lousy day. Things had been going wrong with increasing severity from the moment he had woken up. From the tumble he took stepping out of the shower, to the way Mittens had scratched him when he tried to see what kind of bug she was hunting, from an entire bushel of apples that had gone rotten without explanation, to the refrigerator in the butcher's shop that had shorted out, spoiling a quarter of his stock. Styles walked right in and blinked twice at Mike, then at Mittens, who was currently hissing at a wall outlet for no reason that Mike could ascertain. Much to Mike's confusion, he then looked down at his service dog with a faint frown. The dog had gone rigid the moment he had walked in. Styles' jaw went tight, and he said, "Mike, you have to get out of here right now."
"I... what?"
Mike asked, just before a pipe burst with a bang. Styles didn't waste time. He hoisted himself over the counter, grabbed Mike by the elbow, and dragged him out of the shop. The next thing Mike knew, he was standing in the parking lot, bewildered, while the service dog kept him in place by keeping its teeth buried in the cuff of his pants. Styles, meanwhile, had charged into the bakery and started shouting about everyone getting out. Mike was still trying to figure out what was going on when there was a whoomp noise, and the small shed behind the market practically exploded. "Gas leak," Styles was saying to some of the people, trying to keep them calm. He was already on his phone. The next thing Mike knew, there was a black man with a friendly smile pulling him to one side, and he was telling Styles something about an entropy curse. And Mike could have sworn that he heard the teenager say, "I fucking hate sorcerers." And around then, it occurred to him to wonder where Mittens was, since the cat had been inside the shop right before the shed exploded. He didn't even realize he had expressed his worry out loud until Styles said, "Don't worry, I'll go find her," and walked off. 10 minutes later, Styles came back, a little sooty and disheveled, holding a yowling Mittens in his hands. The cat was unharmed, if furious, and settled down once she was back in Mike's grip. Mike was never really sure what had happened that day, but he was pretty sure that Styles had saved his life, possibly the lives of his customers, and most likely his shop as well. So when Styles asked, "Is it okay if I text you before I come, to see what's on sale, so I can plan out the meals while I'm at home and make sure I have enough of everything I need? He said sure. And a little while later, he had offered to maybe get some stuff together for Styles before he came, to save him some time.
You do that?
Styles asked. And Mike said sure. Grocery stores had only been invented in the 20th century. Before that, it was a shopkeeper's job to assemble purchases for a customer. So when he picked up his phone, he saw Styles' usual bi-weekly text of,
Yo, Mike, what's good today? Got some good pork chops for you. Bone in the way you like them,
Mike replied.
Cool. Good apples? You want Gala or Max? Max, I think,
Styles replied, and proceeded to rattle off his grocery list. As usual, it was an obscene amount of food. If anything, it had only gotten bigger since Mike had first met him a year previous. 10 pounds of pork chops, 1 peck of apples, 5 pounds of green beans, 3 dozen eggs, 2 pounds of butter, 3 loaves of bread, 2 white, and 1 wheat. And on from there. Mike shared the list with Margaret, and they started getting it ready. Mike knew that Styles still had to do some of his grocery shopping at the regular store, for things like cereal and coffee and peanut butter. But the majority of his fresh food came from Mike's shop. Mike joked that Styles was going to be solely responsible for putting his 2 kids through college. Styles just laughed.
Why does he need so much food anyway? Margaret asked once. Sheriff Stalinsky's a widower. It should just be the 2 of them.
Mike shrugged and replied that it wasn't his business. There was a lot about Styles that wasn't his business, or anyone's, and the majority of Beacon Hills was happy to keep it that way. Dr. Kirby was in his 5th hour of his shift at the Beacon Hills emergency room when he glanced up as Roche wrote a new name on the whiteboard.
No, he said. No, do not even finish writing that.
Roche capped the marker and gave him a sympathetic look.
Sorry, Dr. Kirby.
In a bright tone, she added, He's back. Kirby groaned and snatched the chart.
What is it this time?
He fell while ice skating.
Sure, he fell, Kirby said with a snort. He skimmed the particulars and then slapped the chart against the counter and started making notes on it.
Ugh, I don't even want to see him until he's back from X-ray, he added, and practically flung the chart at Roche.
She tried not to smirk at him and took it out of his hands. 40 minutes later, the X-rays were done, and the radiologist had reviewed them, and Dr. Kirby pushed aside the curtain to face the teenager sitting on the bed with a sour look on his face.
Well, Mr. Stalinsky, it seems you have mysteriously escaped broken bones yet again.
That's what I told everyone, Styles said. Kirby scowled at him, but then, for good measure, scowled at the enormous wolf dog in its ridiculous blue vest.
It scowled back.
But they were all like, No, Styles, that was a really nasty spill. You should really get your ankle x-rayed.
Kirby shook his head and started to jot down some notes. He muttered to himself while he did a basic exam, which Styles protested vociferously.
You know they don't make frequent flyer points for emergency rooms, right? Kirby asked, as he shined a flashlight in Styles' eyes.
Ow, what? Styles said, flinching back. It's not my fault!
You must be the most accident-prone person in all of California, Kirby said. Follow the light, you know the drill.
Styles groaned, but did as he was told.
I don't have a concussion, he said. I didn't even hit my head!
Did I ask if you hit your head? Kirby growled.
I did not, but I'm still checking for brain damage, because that's the only conceivable reason I can think of that someone as accident-prone as you would think it was a good idea to go ice skating in the first place. In the middle of the night, no less.
Styles huffed out a sigh, but allowed Kirby to finish his exam.
It wasn't in the middle of the night, he said. I fell hours ago. I just waited to come to the ER until you were on shift, because I know you like me so much.
Kirby grabbed an ace bandage and shot the teenager a murderous look.
Are you serious?
Well, sort of, Styles said. I did fall this afternoon. I tried to shrug it off at first, but then the swelling got worse. He gave a little shrug and continued. Then I decided to wait until after the shift change, because I know that Dr. Soyan has been working evenings lately and, last time I came in, she kept me there for hours for a social services consult. You know, I think she thinks I have an abusive boyfriend or something.
Kirby rolled his eyes and said, I can't think of many people I would find less likely to put up with an abusive boyfriend than you, Stilinski.
He secured the bandage and said, I'll write you a prescription for some Vicodin. Keep it elevated tonight. Don't put any weight on it for 2 or 3 days. And for Christ's sake, no ice skating until you've gained control over your peripheral nervous system.
Yes, sir, Styles said, grinning.
Kirby glared back, tore the prescription off the pad, and shoved it in his general direction.
I don't want to see you in here for at least 3 weeks, he said. I'll do my best, Styles said, leaning on his totally not a wolf as he hobbled towards the exit.
Kirby shook his head and began to document the visit. Once he had it completed, he grabbed the next chart from Roche.
So if he didn't fall while ice skating, Roche said, what happened?
I have no idea, Kirby said. I didn't ask and I don't want to know.
Okay, so here's the scoop, Anna said to her new classmate. She began pointing to different tables in the cafeteria. There's your basic jock group. Less douchey than some other jock groups I've run into over the years. Actually, a few of them are genuinely nice. Over there is your cheerleader table. They've all seen Mean Girls too many times, and you want to avoid them.
Got it, Leslie said. So that table is the nerds, she continued for Anna, peering around the cafeteria.
They're your basic mathletes, Anna agreed. Good in a pinch if you've got a big test you don't want to fail. Over there is your artsy crowd, your hipsters, your punks, your emo goths. You know, like everywhere.
Who's that group over there? Leslie asked, pointing to a table.
Them? That's Stilinski's crew. They're kind of difficult to pigeonhole.
Well, they kind of look like your typical beautiful people group, Leslie said, sounding a little dubious.
Well, sort of, Anna said. But okay, you see the kid with the brown spiky hair and the ginormous dog in the blue vest? That's Styles. He's kind of their ringleader, which seems totally normal until you know that 2 years ago, he was a complete outcast. Like, seriously, total Loserville. And then his pal Scott, on his right, he started doing great at lacrosse and dating Allison, the brunette next to him. And anyway, suddenly they were sort of popular. And now a bunch of them play lacrosse, but Styles is still a complete dork, and he doesn't even try to hide it.
What's with the dog? Leslie asked, taking a bite of her apple.
He's a service dog, Anna said. Actually, Styles is pretty open about that. He has PTSD.
What's that? Leslie asked.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. Something bad happened to Styles.
Anna's voice took on a subdued tone.
Nobody really knows what. He doesn't talk about it. It's funny because he's pretty chatty and sometimes you can't get him to shut up. But then there are times when you realize you don't have a clue what's going on with him.
Crazy, Leslie said. Okay, who else? The chick in his lap must be his girlfriend, right?
Sort of, Anna said. That's Erica. She's kind of like the village bicycle. I mean, she makes that joke herself. She's a total slut and completely unashamed of it. We're all pretty sure Styles is boning her, but they're sure as hell not dating. Sometimes you see him around town with this older guy, and we think maybe they have a thing. Basically, we have no idea what's going on, and Styles seems to think it's fun to keep us guessing.
Maybe it's all one big polyamory thing, Leslie suggested.
I've heard weirder theories, Anna said, opening a juice box. Anyway, Scott and Allison are like an institution, so don't even bother hitting on either of them. They've got rings and shit. They're going to make beautiful babies. She gave a wistful sigh. And Danny's gay, but any of the others would be up for grabs if you wanted to give it a try.
I don't know. Cliques like that?
Leslie wrinkled her nose.
You know, you'd totally expect them to be huge jerks, Anna agreed. But they're not. I mean, a couple people I know have tried sitting with them at lunch or at games or whatever and said that they're always really nice and welcoming, but that somehow they have this aura. Like, you don't belong there and you know it, even if they're being super nice.
Weird, Leslie said.
Yeah,
Anna agreed.
They're not elitist, but they're totally exclusive. The only exception to that rule is Danny. Sometimes he sits with Styles crew, and sometimes he sits with the jocks. Because his best friend is Jackson, co-captain of the lacrosse team. Complete asshole and total dreamboat.
She gestures with a wave of her hand.
But he's, like, the only person in the entire high school who does that.
Leslie finishes her apple and tosses the core in the trash can. Anything else I should know about them? Anna hesitates for a moment.
Look, you've only been in town for, like, a week, right? So you probably haven't realized exactly how weird stuff can get around here. But for the record, if you're ever somewhere minding your own business and Styles or one of his crew shows up and tells you to duck or run or hide in a closet, just do it, and don't ask questions.
Leslie looked at Anna with her mouth ajar.
What? She said.
Just trust me, Anna said.
Oh, hey, there's the bell. I gotta go. See you later.
She grabbed her backpack and left the cafeteria in a rush. Leslie frowned and looked over at the table where the Stilinski crew was sitting. She was surprised to see that Styles was looking at her. And when she blinked at him, he smiled and lifted his hand in a wave of greeting. Automatically, she waved back and wondered why it seemed like Styles had heard exactly what they were talking about.
Okay, hustle, hustle, Finstock shouted. Come on, you little ingrates, faster! I want to feel the hair on my head move from the wind you're generating.
That doesn't make any sense, coach. We're way over here.
Shut up, Balinski. Nobody asked you.
Yes, sir, coach.
Finstock shook his head in disgust.
What am I going to do after those idiots graduate? He muttered.
Seriously, gonna lose all four of them and Whitmore in the same year? I'm going to be back at the starting block. And it's hard to go back. I don't think I'll be able to do it.
You still have me, coach.
Greenberg, you flunked three classes. It's not something to be proud of. Finstock raised his voice.
Come on, I want to see your eyeballs bleeding from the effort you're putting in.
That's gross, coach.
Shut up, Balinski.
The team comes rounding the final curve of the track. Hardly any of them are out of breath, Finstock notes with some pride. He's got a good team this year.
Okay, now as you all know, the game against Merced High is this Saturday. I want you all in top form. So eat lots of protein, don't overwork yourselves, and no sex. That means you, McCall.
Actually, studies have proven that sex before athletics can be really...
This isn't a science class, Balinski. Keep it to yourself.
Finstock waved them towards the locker room.
Now, get out of my face.
He shook his head as he headed back to the school. Next year was going to be tough, that was for sure.
What do you think I'd have to do to get them to turn a couple freshmen before they go? He asked.
What, coach? Greenberg asked.
Nothing, Finstock said, waving him off. Never mind.
To himself, he just shook his head again and muttered,
"Fucking werewolves."